yet to me, though that is hard to do from a point of view that it will take, that is hard to do. When I think of hard and easy in terms of practice, what I think of is bone crunching and austerity. It's as though something in me is trying to find the place where the hard that feels to me to be destructive is let go, or is minimized, so that there's room to deal with this hard that's soft. And I feel like I'm always struggling with that line, that my angers and my resistances and my joys and my sticking to it are always struggling in that line. Maybe I'm somebody who's more chicken than others about physical pain, but that's the place that says she.
Could respond.
Yeah.
I could respond, but maybe later. Robin?
It's the sheen of the time when you know that it's hard, and you're saying this is really hard, and everybody knows it's hard, so you kind of accept that and work on it. And like Al said about, you know, if you're interested enough to watch your lack of interest, then you're interested already. But there's this other time for me that I found, like this week, the week before Sashin, which is really hard because it's really a confused time. It's like, I don't really know, and I don't want to practice too hard now because I'm going to have to practice really hard for Sashin, and I got to get all my, you know, goodies in because I can't have them during Sashin, and, you know, all this stuff. And it doesn't feel like hard practice. It's usually harder for me, both physically and mentally, I think, than the actual. But in your lecture, you're talking about the sheen as though it's some other time, and I think that's part of the problem. Is I think of it as some other time or place or vacation that I'm going to, and but there's this other stuff that I can't find. And maybe you could give us some hints about what to do to help this time. Maybe call it profane time for the sacred time.
I think in some ways you said enough. It's just that it's in some ways a little bit arbitrary almost to signal out Sashin to give this talk. And this talk could be just about our practice, all practice period, or our life all the time. And so it can relate. This could just as well be used for this next week as it could be during Sashin. Just stay simple and stay quiet and stay interested in. Stay real simple. You know, the problem with anticipation, like of Sashin, is we get so caught up in our thoughts and anticipation that we're no longer simply resting in the moment-to-moment experience. It's like Bodhidharma regretting that the emperor left. You know, we're not regretting something that's left, but we're kind of fearful or anticipating or worrying about something that's going to happen in the future. And now is not the future. Now the Sashin is not happening at all. So just simply staying in the present and if you simply stay in the present, in some ways the Sashin will never come. And this is the way that I approach my life. I try to approach it. I try not to worry about things in the future because that's just my thoughts, my concepts of it. And I try to just stay with each day. Is that maybe a little bit helpful?
Yeah, but the thoughts and the concepts, they're very real. They're very real to me. They really change the way that I function. They change the way my body is mad. They're my thoughts, and they're very real, you know. They really affect me. So I guess just thinking of the machine in the future or something that's not really going to happen is helpful. And yet I still have to wash my clothes because I'm not going to have time to, you know, do it during the machine and stuff like that.
If you think, so maybe your situation where you feel that the thoughts and concepts are so real, you identify with this, with them so solidly, maybe it's good to kind of juice you up a little bit for sesshin so you can really throw yourself in wholeheartedly and start realizing that they're not so real. And I don't say that facetiously or something, but I mean, that's my deepest wish for you, is that you could start breaking up that solidity. Okay.
Seems to me that the way you're talking about this is pretty glib.
Pretty glib?
Glib.
Could you say what that means?
That these are not easy things to do. That they're not sort of just, if you just are in the present moment, then everything takes care of itself. If that's a truism, and it is true, but it's very difficult to do, particularly if you come from a background where your tendency is to beat yourself for every moment that you don't spend in the present moment, and every moment that you don't spend patiently watching impermanence go by, and every moment that you don't want to be silent. And I think that what goes along with this is if you can talk about all these things this way, but if you have a tendency to be that way towards yourself, which I think is what Albert was trying to talk about, then you end up just bludgeoning yourself the whole shishin long about what a failure you are in this situation. And I think that these things are not easy concepts, and they're not easy things to do, and that they are laudable activities to engage in, and they are the essence of the practice, but that you have to have compassion and patience while you're in the course of doing it.
So I'm taking that as assumed.
But I don't think it is assumed.
Okay.
I think that all of us, that's probably, for a lot of us, that's a big part of our practice, is compassion and patience with ourselves and with other people.
Okay, well, I apologize if it's not assumed. I assume that all of us are... another lecture that I wanted to give a lecture on compassion and loving kindness. I thought of giving one entirely on loving kindness, because I think loving kindness is one of the greatest things that I've discovered in my practice of Buddhism. But I have this feeling that Zen students don't like to talk about loving kindness. That, you know, it's a kind of a Theravada or Hinayana idea or practice, and we're more interested in, you know, direct penetration of reality, and rather than something more sentimental. And but I kind of take it as being assumed and necessary part of the practice. Maybe, you know, some point down the line, I can give another talk about loving kindness. But again, you know, I sympathize very much with Kokai and Jaku and all of you who feel maybe a little bit oppressed by this kind of talk. But both sides are true. There's both sides of one coin. There has to be the compassionate, gentle, loving side, accepting side of ourselves. A lot of what Zen practice is about for me is just this kind of total, radical self-acceptance. And there also is a side of making some kind of very soft, gentle effort of applying oneself and to talk about simplicity and quiet and stillness and silence and some interest. I didn't think it was going to cause a lot of difficulty. I apologize very much if people get anxious and confused and self-critical from any of this. Jim?
Yeah, sort of along the same line, but I was thinking, if two human beings come into this session, one, in this sort of realm of spiritual progress, one has developed some concentration, one is able to mainly just bring yourself in and set themselves down. Are they doing anything different?
If one has ideas of spiritual progress?
It's sort of in that, it sort of feels to me like it's in that realm of spiritual progress, because if some way we can measure and say this human being has developed steady concentration, that's some sort of progress in spirit. And another human being is not so concentrated, but they sit themselves down on the cushion for 7 days. Are they doing anything different?
Well, I mean, if one person is concentrated and another person is not concentrated, in some ways they're doing something different. Just obvious, there's difference there. But I think inherently, they're all, both of them are Buddhas. And both of them, and you know, for us, a lot of what our practice is simply just accepting us as we are as being Buddhas. You know, Dogen doesn't talk about changing your state of mind. He doesn't talk about changing who you are. He doesn't talk about changing what you're experiencing. You know, he said, like I read in here, there's no mistakes, no increase or decrease, there's no delusion. Whatever mental state you have, that itself is Buddha. Maybe the difference between the two is that one difference is possible is that there's a difference, big difference between accepting yourself as a Buddha for whatever is going on as Buddha, even distractedness and restlessness and resistance as being Buddha, and not seeing it, not doing it, being caught up in other ideas of who you are.
I was always, when I was used to be a junko walking around, and now that I sit facing out, I have more chance to see people sit. And to me, it's always more encouraging. I'm more encouraged by people who have obviously a hard time sitting there and make some effort to sit there, than by the people who, and you could say, some concentration or have an easy time. So in terms of usefulness to other people, I think people who have a hard time, to me, are very often more encouraging and more helpful.
Fernando?
I do have a reaction for guidelines, like don't talk on this and the other, but from what you said and from what you read from Dogen, I think that the practice is especially for a beginner like me. It's you have to put up not just a gentle effort, I think it has to be a great effort. And I will measure it in this way. If somebody who doesn't need those guidelines or is beyond those guidelines should be a person that wants that then is optional, should sit 2 periods. And when they ask that we're only going to sit 1 period tonight, which is big, and one said one. I mean, if I will see that spirit in myself, then I would say, okay, I'm the only guy. But, or when I'm a Jikyo and I feel good, but I take the morning, that then, what? Now, if I will be beyond those, if I would be able to do that, I would be beyond those guidelines. That's my opinion. I appreciate your time.
Okay.
In reference to what I said before, I think that from what's just transpired in the course of this conversation, I think the guidelines are wonderful. And Jaku herself has said to me, let's be silent. and wanted very much to have a shishin where we never said a word to each other. And I think that my problem is that my feeling about you, Gil, is that these things do not come hard for you, that they're extremely easy things for you to do. And therefore, it's difficult for me, for you to tell me that these are things that I should do when I feel like they're so easy for you. And that when you say them that way, that it's sort of like I take them in like, oh, wow, they're so easy. You know, they shouldn't be a problem for me at all. It should be very easy for me to do. I should be able to keep my mouth shut for the whole shishin and stay concentrated on my back and the fact that it hurts. And all these things should happen. And it should be like falling off a log or off my cushion or whatever. And so what I'm saying is that that's my reaction. It's sort of like, I want to hear from you. I want to hear the other side. I want to hear that be compassionate with yourself when you can't do these things. And I want to hear, be patient when you can't do these things, because they're not so easy to do.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Sashin and practice is not easy for me either. Some things are easy. I mean, my legs are so stretched out now that I don't have much pain in my legs anymore. I get pains elsewhere, like my back. But some certain things are easy, but boy, you know, I've gone through so much horrendous pain to get to this point that I remember really well, I mean, you know, what it's like. And the reason I kind of ended the talk was talking about how hard sashin can be is I really know how hard it is. It's going to be hard for me too. I don't doubt it. Just some things are easier. I mean, I have an easier time with my legs. But in terms of harmonizing my mind, I think there are people here who have much easier time than I do. So, but anyway, this is... Yeah, I appreciate what you said. Yeah.
Listening to all this talk, what's been going on, what came up in my mind is that, you know, we all have a difficulty with judging. You know, we either judge ourselves by what's presented outside, and what's even worse is we judge ourselves by our own standards. And it's constantly going on. And I've been doing that a lot, and I'm still doing it. And one thing I found living here at Tassajara was, you know, if I measure myself too much in the outside, this is not actually what I'm here for. You know, what I'm really here for is my own practice. And when I sit sashin, what will really matter at the end is what I actually did there with myself. And it doesn't matter so much what was presented to me from the outside or if people think I'm good or bad or anything. The only thing which matters is what I actually did with myself or how much I practiced. And I might not even be aware of what I was practicing because it's so deep unconscious that I can't name it. But that's the only thing I feel is important, because that's just going to help me once I leave. You know, it's not going to help me if I measured myself up to anything, my own judgments or other people's judgments. And that's a very strong feeling I have now. The only thing that matters is my own intention to practice. And that's sort of what Jaku says is, you know, trust, my willingness to be here and practice.
Yeah, but one of the things we do sometimes is, and I apologize if I offended any of you, is some people sit up here and talk about, you know, different kind of advice or points of view about how to do our practice, and you don't have to accept it, or you still should trust, and basically trust and be centered in your own practice, and especially for yourself. But if you can use anything that I said, great. If you can't use it, then don't. But what was kind of what I wanted to do is I just wanted to encourage you all to make a really good effort, and not only make a real good effort for yourself, but to have a real deep respect for sashin, and for everybody else who's sitting sashin. So even if Albert, you know, has to talk, he should talk to himself, because. I mean, this is, you know, you have to kind of figure this out, the spirit of this for yourself. But please respect everybody else around here. I mean, I can see sometimes that, even during the practice period, I can see, you know, the kind of, there's a lot of talking going on during times we're supposed to be silent. And there's a lot of kind of a lot of ways which slowly more and more in the course of the practice period, people are taking more and more edges off the schedule and off the basic guidelines for practice period. And I just want to remind you all to please respect each other. And if you talk to someone else, you're disturbing their concentration, their practice in some ways, their momentum. Of course, you guys can decide together to talk, but I just wanted to encourage you to make your best effort, whatever that means for you, and to respect everybody else's effort and help them kind of be hermits if they can, if they want to be.
I hope that you didn't understand what I said. It's me referring to English talk.
No. I'm sorry. I was just driving home the bigger point for everybody. I'm sorry. Pulled you out of the crowd.
I personally love it when people talk about loving kindness, and I thought it was kind of you to talk about concentration. And watching how we're responding with language, I'm very glad we're going to be silent pretty soon.
Is it okay to continue, or should we stop? Who wants to stop?
You want lunch?
Yeah. Seems that only very few people want to stop. Is there more people want to stop? Let's see your hands. Well, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough people that we should stop.
Maybe you should apologize.
That's
all. But I appreciate everybody who said.
It was fun to stir things up a little bit, and but I do really hope that you are really kind to yourself, really compassionate, and respectful for yourself, and to realize that you don't have, whoever you are right now is fine. Whatever state of mind, whatever lack of concentration, nothing really matters. It just matters that we accept ourselves as basically exactly who we are. And please, make that foundation of your life. Love yourself. Did I cover myself? Anyway, thank you very much. Join the small mind we have with the big mind, to immerse our mind with the universal mind, to immerse ourselves in the way. When I was in Japan, one of the writings of Dogen, which isn't really part of the Shobogenzo, which the monks in Japan often recommend that I read, seemed to be the, one of his writings that was most revered by people actually practicing. And it was called Guidelines in Studying the Way. Guidelines for Studying the Way. And here Dogen writes, "Those who study the way seek to be immersed in the way. For those who are immersed in the way, all traces of enlightenment perish. Those who practice the Buddha way should first of all trust in the Buddha way. Those who trust in the Buddha way should trust that they are in essence within the Buddha way, where there is no delusion, no false thinking, no confusion, no increase or decrease, and no mistakes. To arouse such trust and illuminate the way in this manner, and to practice accordingly, are fundamental in studying the way. You do this by sitting zazen." So I think for Dogen, whatever mental state, whatever conscious state that our mind is in, without exception, that mind itself is already immersed in the way. But usually, I don't think we completely 100% realize this or accept this or live that way. So I think of Sesshin and also Zazen, Zen practice, as being not so much something you actively do, maybe, that you're actively going to harmonize your small mind or join your small mind with the big mind, but it's more of an aligning or a tuning. You're attuning yourself to this fundamental fact of reality that already we're immersed in the Buddha way. So it's not so much a matter of doing something as just leaving everything alone. Leaving everything alone in some very fundamental, radical way. And so in that sense, I think our practice is very simple. And I think it's one of the hallmarks of our practice is to keep it real simple. As soon as you complicate it, I think we often miss the point, miss the way. So this is the first point I want to bring up, which is simplicity. Simplicity during Sesshin. I think that to sit zazen is to be simple, almost simple-minded. And as it says in Hokyo Zamai, practice intimately, working within, as though a fool like an idiot. And so to practice within, to be intimate, I think is to stay very intimate, very close to our actual direct experience of what's happening. The only place that the Buddha way is going to unfold for us, the only place that our practice is going to unfold is in our direct experience. And so the trick is to find some way to have a very simple, direct relationship with our direct experience. So it's, again, it's not doing something with our experience, it's letting it be. And so one of the things that's very important to investigate or study when we're sitting zazen is how we react to our experience. Whether there's any kind of subtle forms of aversion or attachment to what's going on. And this not doing of zazen, this leaving things alone, is walking a very narrow edge, kind of a razor's edge, between any kind of clinging and holding or any kind of pushing away. For me, maintaining a simple relationship with what's happening is somewhat like resting myself, resting my mindfulness in whatever's predominant at that time. And usually we take the breath as being a predominant object, as being the main focus of our concentration during zazen, following the inhalation and exhalations. And but sometimes, especially during sesshin, other things become predominant. We can get pretty uncomfortable, there can be a lot of pain, a lot of strong emotions. And it's not necessary to struggle during zazen. If there's any sense of struggle, then our attention is split. We're trying to keep our attention, our focus, our concentration on one thing, but something else is really going on. And the struggle comes up from the tension between those two things. And rather than struggling with something, the feeling of zazen is more like rest. So rather than struggling with a split attention, if something else becomes more dominant than the breath, take that up as the main focus of the concentration. Make that the predominant object in your sitting. And stay with it as long as it's there, as long as it's as it really hooks your attention. And our attention kind of has its power to hold us, start to decrease, then you can return to the breath and stay with the breath again. So I like the T.S. Eliot's line, concentration without elimination. We don't eliminate anything from our concentration. We also don't take everything as our object of our concentration. When we try to stay in the present moment, in the present experience, there's some kind of selection that goes on. We don't try to be aware of the whole range, the whole spectrum of possible experiences that are going on. But we usually select the breath, and if something else becomes dominant, we go to that. And it's very important to maintain a continuity of concentration, of mindfulness, a continuity of being in the simple present, in our actual direct, non-conceptual experience of what's going on. And there's two dharmas, or two technical Buddhist terms, which describe, which are helpful to understand in maintaining some continuity in our practice, continuity of concentration. And the usual English translation of these is applied and sustained application of thought. And I think in a more practical way, I think of the first as being aiming or placing, hooking the mindfulness, the concentration on some object, onto the breath. It's really important to very clearly settle down into the abdomen and place the concentration there. And the second one, the sustained application of thought, is more like keeping the mind there once it's placed there. The literal translation of the Sanskrit word vichara is to rub. So you want to rub the abdomen. If you're following your breath and your hara and your stomach, you keep your mind there and rub it, gently rubbing it. I sometimes use the analogy of fishing in my zazen. And the first placing is kind of like hooking the fish. So I hook my mindfulness, hook my concentration onto the breath in my abdomen down here. And then I start reeling it in. And I don't know too much about fishing, but my impression is that when you're reeling in a fish, it's very important to maintain a very gentle tautness in the line the whole time you're reeling it in. If you pull in the fish with too much tension, pulling it in too hard, the line might break, or the hook might tear out of the fish. However, if you're too slack, if you let the line be slack, then sometimes the fish can loosen itself from the hook and swim away. So it's very important to maintain a kind of continuous kind of tautness or tension. So as I'm sitting with my breath, I kind of feel a tautness, kind of a gentle, soft tautness that's sustained over time. Kind of reeling in the thought, staying with it and staying with it and staying with it. And it's only with staying with it that the Buddha way can really start opening up. It's only by staying in our experience. As soon as we leave our experience, which means to get involved in our distractions and our distracted thoughts, the unfolding of the Buddha way is going to stop. Our experience of the unfolding of it. And if we can, if it's possible to maintain some continuity of the concentration, then it's possible to start seeing the gaps and discontinuities of our actual experience, of phenomena itself as it comes up. This is really important, especially during sesshin, when there's sometimes very intense experiences, very strong feelings. It can be a lot of pain, a lot of strong emotions, and if you keep your concentration really focused, really continuous, and sometimes it's, you know, the longer, more intimate you can get with the breath, the easier it is to see the discontinuities which are inherent in everything that's happening. So that all these difficulties that we have during sesshin don't have to be so difficult if we can see them as being discontinuous, see the gaps in between them. It's when there's some experience of discontinuity that bodhicitta has a chance to arise in us. And I would say technically that bodhicitta doesn't really arise until there's a very clear and very strong experience and seeing of impermanence, of the rapid arising and passing away of phenomena. And in that same section, Guidelines for Studying the Way, Dogen opens his essay on by saying that bodhicitta is the mind which sees into impermanence, that sees fully the uncertain world of life and death. And when we start to experience this discontinuity of phenomena of our emotions and mental states and our physical sensations. When it becomes strong enough, this sense of impermanence, then the mind will naturally shy away from identifying with it. It will naturally incline itself, naturally move in the direction of awakening. And it's that natural movement, a movement towards awakening, which is the aspiration of enlightenment, which is bodhicitta. And until that time, until impermanence is strong enough that the mind naturally shies away from identifying with anything, bodhicitta is just an abstraction, just an idea. It's a very good abstraction, a very good idea, but it's still in the realm of ideas and abstraction. So continuity is real important. Continuity is a very simple practice of being present. And also during sesshin, there's the opportunity of maintaining this continuity throughout the whole day. And I found in my experience this to be extremely important. Is, you know, we can do it in the zendo, but on the break, especially when we leave the zendo and during meals, is do real simple things. Stay simple. Stay simple-minded. Stay simple enough so that you can maintain the momentum of the mindfulness and concentration which is building. There's a real momentum that builds over 7 days, and it's very good to please respect this momentum. And if you don't really know, you don't really recognize the momentum that's building, even when you're having a real hard time, you can interrupt the momentum. You just kind of start over again. So if you can maintain the momentum, it's really helpful. So during the breaks, do simple things. Taking a rest is fine, or having some tea, or going for a walk. But Anything that's more complicated, like writing or talking, is strongly discouraged. And talking in particular is discouraged. And during Sesshin, it's very important to respect the silence for everybody, not only for yourself, but also for the Sangha, for everybody else who's trying so hard. So please try to refrain as much as you can from talking to anybody. You might feel it's okay for you, but it's somewhat disrespectful for the effort of the other people. So silence is the second main point that I want to bring up, maintenance of silence. And you know, it doesn't just mean talking, it means almost any form of communication at all. And one of the guidelines we have for Sesshin is to avoid eye contact. So it's kind of reducing communication to absolute minimum. And the reason for that is that we can really rest and stay with our own direct experience. As soon as we start communicating, our relationship with people and our communication is really complicated, full of abstractions, full of conceptual ideas. And during Sesshin, we're trying to step out of that world of concepts, out of the conceptual world, to be in the world of our direct experience. So if we can not have any forms of communication, really feel like you're a hermit for the week of Sesshin, this is really good. Like a fool, like an idiot. And another meaning of silence, maintaining silence, is not talking to yourself. And that maybe is much harder to do. And but also it's important to try not to talk with yourself during zazen or any time. And in this context, the context of talking to ourselves, I think it's useful to distinguish something that I distinguish in my mind between thoughting and thinking. And the mind will almost always thought. Just produce thoughts. They kind of just bubble up. They bubble up and they arise and they pass away. Just simple thoughts. And this happens a lot during zazen. Thoughts will come. Thoughts will go. And but then there's thinking. And thinking is when we get involved in the thoughts. And we connect the thoughts together in chains. And we get involved in more and more thinking. And the thoughts kind of pull us away. And you can feel sometimes, if you have some experience of real stillness and clarity in zazen, you can feel what it's like. It's really tangible, the feeling of what it's like to start thinking, as opposed to just letting your thoughts kind of pass through you. You kind of feel the thinking will just kind of pull you away. Sometimes I have a feeling of the thinking is like a elastic band just pulling me out from the mind. Or sometimes there's a feeling of tightness or tension that kind of pulling in on the mind when I start thinking. And if I can let go of that, kind of relax the mental muscle, then the thinking will stop. I like the idea of the sky, making the mind like the sky. As a way of just, you know, thoughts can come and go like clouds in the sky, but we're not filling it up with thunderclouds. So Tenshin Sensei has been talking about non-thinking this practice period, and the traditional, usual way of understanding the instructions of non-thinking is simply to leave your thoughts alone. Don't do anything about them. Just let them come, then let them go. And if you can really let them go, they'll disappear real fast, because the nature of thoughts is that they're very short. They're always passing away. any sense of the thoughts lasting over time means that we're involved in them in some way, subtle way. So if we can really learn to leave the thoughts alone, we'll see that they'll actually pass away. They won't trouble us. So non-thinking is just to let thoughts come and let them go without restricting our mind. It's the unrestricted mind of neither suppressing or getting involved in our thoughts. A crucial factor in not getting involved in our thoughts, not getting involved in our thinking, which is there's such a strong tendency in our zazen, in our sitting. Really important to guard us from it is maintaining a strong sense of interest. And if you, especially during sesshin, even during zazen, you have to be really interested in that whole world. You know, you're following, when we're following the breath has to become the most interesting thing that you can possibly think of. You have to find, you know, arouse some interest, arouse that this is the most interesting thing in the world. And if you can't do that, then other things can become more interesting. And all our thoughts, all the plannings and concerns and memories and futures and wonderful creative ideas, they're all going to seem so much more interesting and important than our breath and the simple-minded practice that we have. So it's important to arouse this interest. Interest from the way-seeking mind. So often when I sit down, I check out what my interest is, or I arouse that interest so I can stay with the breath. I think interest and also the maintenance of silence, maintaining some kind of interest in the zazen and silence, they're not grim affairs. It's not some kind of grim restraint. Like for silence, I think silence is, a lot of wonderful things are born out of silence. And even if we didn't sit zazen for this week of sesshin, if we just maintained silence for that week, we would probably develop a very deep sense of inner intimacy with ourselves. And so rather some feeling of austerity, if we really can respect and really can get into the world of silence, the world of stillness during sesshin, it's possible, an opportunity to be in touch with some deeper sense of fullness or completeness that we inherently have. And oftentimes, like gratefulness, feelings of gratefulness are very closely related to experiences of silence. Gratefulness and reverence and joy. And interest itself is the interest in which we stay with our breath, interest in which we stay with our actual direct experience, is a very gentle, almost passive interest, kind of gentle, soft, flexible interest. And I think sometimes of the interest or the effort that we make, that I make in zazen, is more like listening. A profound form of listening. I'm listening to my breath rather than seeing. You know, oftentimes we talk about you know what we see when we sit zazen, and following the breath, following and seeing. Sometimes for me have connotations of being more active, actively involved in doing something, and listening is more not doing. You know, just listening to the abdomen, listening to the hara, listening to the whole inhalation and the whole exhalation. And listening has, for me, a feeling of being non-judgmental. Being kind of friendly. Being friendly with my experience. Friendly, friendly, non-judgmental. There's no mistakes, as Dogen said. Anyway, these are just three simple things which I just wanted to share with you. And I think that in my experience of sitting sesshin, these have been very valuable for me. Staying simple, staying silent, and keeping up the interest. Especially as the sheen draws to the end, it's important. Sometimes as the sheen gets to the end, we tend also to get sometimes quite calm, quite settled. And sometimes it's very hard to maintain the interest when we get calm. You probably had the experience, you know, getting very centered and concentrated and calm in your zazen, and the mind starts thinking. Because it's kind of, and that's really a crucial time to just to reawaken that interest, to keep going even when you start getting calm. So it's a real special opportunity to sit Sashin. And I don't think it's easy. I think Sashin is hard. And whenever people sit Sashin, I feel there's a lot of respect and appreciation for the effort. I wanted to read something about another thing from that section by Dogen. When he talks how hard it is. People of the present say you should practice what is easy to practice. These words are quite mistaken. They are not at all in accord with the Buddha way. If this alone is what you regard as practice, then even lying down would be wearisome. If you find one thing wearisome, you will find everything wearisome. It is obvious that people who are fond of easy practice are not capable of the way. In fact, the Dharma spread and is now present in the world because our great teacher Shakyamuni practiced with difficulty and pain for immeasurable eons and finally attained this Dharma. If the original source is like this, how could the latter streams be easy? The later streams be easy? Students who would like to study the way must not wish for easy practice. If you seek easy practice, you will for certain never reach the ground of truth or dig down to the place of treasure. Even teachers of old who had great capacity said that practice is difficult. You should know that the Buddha way is vast and profound. We can see that breaking bones and crushing marrow is not difficult, but to harmonize the mind is difficult. Again, the practice of prolonged austerities is not difficult, but to harmonize bodily activities and the mind is most difficult. So I think what Dogen is saying about the difficulty of practice of Zazen and Sashin is that we're not supposed to put ourselves under some grueling, horrible, austere discipline. That's not how practice is going to unfold. But to actually do this simple thing of immersing ourselves in the way, of harmonizing the body and the mind, these actually are very difficult things to do. And so I think it's important not to forget that, so we can make our best effort during Sashin and follow the schedule the best we can. And have a good time. And even though it's a week away to Sashin, my wish is that all of you can have lots of joy throughout Sashin. Questions or any comments? Mark?
Sometimes it seems like during the sessions resistance manifests as a very active disinterest in practice. And I've experienced that as being very strange, very difficult to deal with. Feel almost my whole being, right? This is the
So that happens. That happens, and that's reasonable to happen. And but I don't think, I don't think Zen practice or Sashin practice needs to feel like it's a struggle. Even if you might feel this resistance come up, is just enter into the resistance as fully as you can. Like, make that the object of your concentration. Concentrate really deeply. Go into the core of the resistance. And sometimes the physical manifestations of it are really interesting to enter. Like, sometimes it might not be really easy to kind of find where exactly the mental state is, but you can kind of feel what the body's like, the tension that's building up in the body. And you kind of enter into that. Rest in the core of that physical tension. And then there won't be any resistance or any struggle. It'll probably change pretty quickly. There's a tendency often in Sashin to try to make things different than they are. And I've heard you talk about this a little bit different. How you practice with pain. Well, if you don't mind, I've said something. This is common for people. Pain comes up, you feel a lot of pain sometimes when you sit zazen. And there's a lot of kind of manuals, new age books out about how to deal with pain. And one common way is you enter into it with concentration. You concentrate and get as mindful as you can on the pain. If you concentrate on the pain, it'll go away. So this is not zazen. That's a kind of aversion. That's trying to change the situation. When we say zazen, we're not trying to get the pain away. We might enter into that world and concentrate on it, be real mindful of it, but we don't try to change it. We're not doing it in order to get the pain to go away.
Two things came to mind. This was one that had to do with interest, getting interested in something. What came to mind for me was Thich Nhat Hanh talking about enjoying your breathing. I think it's perhaps another way of saying the same thing, one that's easier for me to get a hold of. It took me a while to realize that what a smart teaching it was. For me, when I enjoy something, it means I pay close attention to it. The other thing that occurred to me was that all of the guidelines you suggested sounded like very good ones, but impossible to do perfectly. The greatest pitfall for me in that concentrated practice is being mean to myself about not doing it right. And what came to mind was a phrase from a book written by Strunk and White about writing. Where they lay down all kinds of rules about the proper use of English, elements of style, I guess. And then at the end they say, break any of these rules rather than commit a barbarity in speech. You know, it seems to me like what I'll keep in mind is both the guidelines that you suggested and to break any of them rather than to commit some great unkindness.
Sure. You have to know in the situation what's going to be the most agitating. Sometimes you restrain yourself too much from talking, for example. That could be much more agitating than actually simply saying something. And you have to kind of know yourself and how to use these guidelines. They're just suggesting kind of spirit sashin. And they're not being offered as kind of difficult things to do. Just stay simple. Sashin is a simple thing. Just try to make it simple for yourself. Al?
I just wondered also about the interest or encountering the enjoyment. But it's not something exactly you decide to deliberately do, I think. But somehow, if your interests seem to fade, as you mentioned, if you could just noticing that, I think you would naturally be interested. And I think you would naturally stay interested in actually enjoy meditation. I think that's possible.
You're saying that if you can watch and be present for the rising and fading of interest,
yes,
then you naturally have an interest.
Yes.
But then you already have, then you're already interested enough to begin with.
You used continuity and discontinuity in two different ways.
Right.
And I was wondering if you could sort of synthesize it and say that again differently. You used momentum then for continuity. But it was interesting to me that you used them so differently.
For the first way I used it was talking about concentration and mindfulness, maintaining them as continuous as possible. And if the concentration gets strong and continuous enough, then you can actually see that what we're actually experiencing with our mindfulness, with our concentration, is actually a series of discontinuous experiences. And when it gets strong enough, when the concentration and mindfulness gets really strong, then you start seeing the concentration and mindfulness themselves are discontinuous. But you need to have very strong continuity built up. You know, it's kind of like an illusion in some ways. Our effort has to be, we have to make an effort that doesn't have any gaps in it. We don't experience any gaps. So when there's no gaps in the effort, then we can start seeing that actually there's lots of gaps in everything all the time. And when we become strong enough, we actually see that concentration itself is fading away, rising and passing away all the time. Even our awarenesses. And eventually, everything passes away. The body and mind and the way and everything fall away. So in talking about immersing ourselves in the way, or harmonizing, sometimes sesshin is called harmonizing body and mind. I think that the purpose of sesshin is not to harmonize the body and mind, but it's to harmonize it enough so we can drop body and mind.
That's really lucid. And also I enjoyed you talking about thoughting and thinking,
mm-hmm,
and these chains of association. I call them chaining.
What do you call them?
Chaining.
Chaining.
Because of what they do.
Shackles.
This is the kind of lecture that, excuse me, but a few years ago came that have sent me to tears. I have a really hard time with all this stuff. This is necessary and that is necessary. It seems to me anyway, I feel like I needed to say something because I don't know how other people feel about this, but I don't know if they can be really interested in the way of this approach of concentration. And to me, what about just assuming, trusting in what you're already doing? I wonder what you think is a different approach.
I think that in some ways, I was the same way as you. I think I wouldn't have stood for a lecture like this 8 years ago. I wouldn't know what to have done with it. But it's fine to talk about trusting. I've actually prepared a whole lecture on trusting. Trusting ourselves in some fundamental way. But I would hope that there's in this kind of community in a Zen monastery, there's enough maturity, spiritual maturity, to be able to handle kind of both, to be grounded enough in kind of our basic trust in ourselves, so we don't get agitated or greedy or confused when we're actually talking about actually more specific things we can do in our practice to actually maintain some interest and actually. So there's a kind of spiritual maturity that's able to handle the idea of, for example, progress, spiritual progress. There is spiritual progress. And Dogen, you know, Dogen is uncompromising. You know, probably you and I, in the way we were some years ago, wouldn't have wanted ever to have met Dogen. Because he's so uncompromising about really making strict, strong practice. And And he talks about attaining all the time, realizing him. And he talks about realization and practice realization being one. But he also really makes a strong emphasis that you need to get enlightened. You need to have some deep experience of dropping body and mind. But he's always making it from this point of view, you know, basically trusting that we're already perfect, already complete. So for him, he has this maturity to balance both of them. And this is how I feel, you know, that it's possible to do both. And I think, you know, with a community like this, especially during Sesshin, I feel some permission to kind of talk a little bit more about the other side. But it's not to discourage anybody or to get anybody feel that you know, they can't do this. Zen practice is something anybody can do anytime. It's attainable quite easily. It's a simple thing. Feel a bit better?
Your response is quite what I was talking about.
Interested in the part, I don't know what you read about the part and the instinct.